John Daly here. You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spin on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily, and the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto, America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
I'm John Batchelor. This is the new John Batchelor Show, represented by CBS News Radio. I welcome my colleagues, Thaddeus McCotter, American Greatness, Malcolm Holine, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations. I begin with surprising headlines over these last days. Iran threatens to kill U.S. Army General. Iran threatens to attack Fort McNair, the U.S. Army base outside of Washington. It reads in part, the National Security Agency intercepted communications in January, just passed, indicating that Iran's Revolutionary Guard Corps discussed carrying out an assault against Fort McNair to kill General Martin, the Army's Vice Chief of Staff. This is the Iran Revolutionary Guard's elite Quds Force. Malcolm, a good evening to you. I believe that you've characterized these threats as typical of the elite force and that we're learning now about something that's in the near past. So I'm not going to ask you about this report, just to say that it's typical of the aggression of the Iranians. Thaddeus has questions. Thaddeus?
Yes, Malcolm, are there fresher threats from the Iranians towards the United States and our allies?
They are definitely the gift that keeps on giving. So good evening to both of you. That report is, it's interesting in and of itself in that there have been several verifications of things that took place in the past, including the raid last January on the LSI base, the missile attack by the Iranians, which they acknowledge and said was done in retaliation for the death of Qasem Soleimani. But they revealed the pictures, and now Iranian television is running these American released photos of the missile attack. But the big story, I think, is the Iran announced that they're going to cold test the redesigned Iraq nuclear reactor, which you may recall we talked about many times before the signing of the 2015 JCPOA, and the promise that it was supposed to be fully decommissioned. And now we understand that the Iraq reactor will be fully commissioned later this year, that it's being rebuilt, that the initial startup of fluid systems and support systems will take place in the new Iranian New Year, which begins today. And so we're seeing advanced work in the field of fuel storage, et cetera, according to the acknowledgement of Iranian officials. They had agreed to shut it down. It's southwest of Tehran, about 250 kilometers southwest of Tehran, and they were only supposed to be able to produce a limited amount of heavy water. And we know that they've been reusing it. They said it was for medical isotopes. It's quite clear that that isn't the case, and that we see also in Natanz that they are using the more advanced IR-4 centrifuges, speeding up the process of enrichment and also stockpiling much more than they're allowed. At least three cascades or clusters of more advanced centrifuges were moved from the above-ground Natanz to the underground facility, which, of course, is more impenetrable. So that's one set of the things that we've seen. But we also, an underground missile city, which is fitted with electronic equipment, they showed videos without identifying where it is. But supposedly they're saying they're building these missile cities with rows of what look like missiles in an underground facility with cement walls. And no locations were given. They say, the Iran Revolutionary Guard says, that they have cruise and ballistic missiles and electronic warfare equipment. So for a country that is supposedly wants to move back into the JCPOA, we're seeing much more aggressive actions and verbiage. The speeches given in regard to the new year as well, diminishing the United States, demeaning the United States' role in the region, and boasting about the fact that they have 5,000 IR-1 centrifuges and 30 cascades, et cetera. So we know that they have the new missile launch systems. We know that they have these underground facilities and are enriching at an ever faster rate.
Malcolm, there's a story out of Reuters that says that an Iran lawmaker, as out of Newsweek, an Iran lawmaker is acknowledging that the aggression about the suspect nuclear weapons program is for leverage with the Biden administration. Is that credible to you?
It is credible. Iran's economic conditions are terrible. The internal dissent continues to increase. The concern about what will happen in the upcoming election remains. There are all sorts of signals that, on one hand, the Ayatollah may not want to go back into the JCPOA, that this is not just a stalling, but he does not intend to do it, or they're trying to put it off until after the election, or believe that the administration, because of various signals that they claim they're getting, might be ready to do it in a staged way that will enable Iran to continue the enrichment as it is, and over time perhaps reach a different kind of accord. The administration is still demanding that they meet again the requirements of JCPOA, and then negotiations could start. But there are back channel talks, it seems.
All right. We also have a report that our friend Mr. Zarif, the foreign minister, who's a charming speaker and knows his bottles of wine, has taken a sudden turn toward the hard line. Does this make sense, Malcolm, given all the years that Mr. Zarif has spent encouraging John Kerry?
It's very fitting into the scenario that I just described, and we're seeing manifestations elsewhere. Zarif is looking at the end of his political career. He's not very popular at home, and, you know, they think he is popular abroad, but it's less so the case than they believe. So he is probably trying to position himself for the outcome of the elections and to be in a position perhaps to continue serving in this or another capacity.
Malcolm, there was a report that there were a large demonstrations outside the prime minister's house in Jerusalem. Malcolm, that is, you have questions about the Israeli election.
Yes, what's going on with the Israeli elections, Malcolm?
That's the best question there is, because nobody really knows. But we're coming to an election on the 23rd, 2 days, and right now the numbers seem to be looking better for the prime minister, that he needs to get to 61 votes with his Likud party or in coalition with others. Some of the other major parties have said they don't want to coalesce. They don't want to be in a Netanyahu-led government. He's now the longest-serving prime minister. But his numbers seem to be getting better over the weekend and getting closer to the 61-vote threshold. Some of the parties that were expected to do much better have diminished. So it's really a toss-up. It'll depend on the turnout. It'll depend on the mood in the country, how young people. But there was a huge demonstration against him yesterday, last night. But it's not an unusual development. There have been ongoing demonstrations. They're organized, particularly left and other groups that oppose him. But there seems to be a lot of discontent because this is the fourth election in 2 years and could well come up with an undecided outcome, which would lead to a fifth election, perhaps in September. Everybody wants to avoid it. Netanyahu promised that wouldn't be the case. So there are all sorts of options of how a coalition could come together. Whether Netanyahu will lead the next government is the big question.
Isn't it true, Malcolm, that the prime minister's hand is never stronger than in the period between calling an election and the election, because he directs without the Knesset?
Absolutely true, and it is the strongest time. And, you know, it'll take probably a month after the election first to get the results until they start negotiating. The president then gives a 28-day period to one of the parties, whoever has the most likely ability to get to 61. And they can extend it again for another 2 weeks, I think. And then if they're not able to do it, he can turn to the other parties. And if nobody is a real stalemate, then he can say that he couldn't reach an agreement and move to the Knesset for new elections.
It occurs to me, Malcolm, that Israeli elections are Groundhog Day. You know, if you don't like it today, we're going to do it again tomorrow. Whereas the Palestinian Authority elections, they're the anti-Groundhog. We do it once forever, and that's it.
Maybe.
Are they actually going to have another election? Because that would ruin their record of being the anti-Groundhog.
Well, actually, Hamas is making considerable inroads. It's really concern that is coming up from not only from Israel, Egypt, others, that because of the disarray within the Fatah, within the Palestinian Authority, that and the divisive vote, and now it looks like Al-Kidwe, who I described last week, he was Arafat's nephew, head of a foundation that all of a sudden the PA defunded, could be the front runner right now in opposition to Abbas, or Abbas could move to postpone the elections as he's done many times before out of fear that there could be a Hamas victory. Hamas's interest is in getting a foothold in the West Bank, being part or even in the leadership of a new government, even if they would leave Abbas as a figurehead to deal with the world.
Thaddeus, you have a question from Malcolm.
Yes, Malcolm, what is the situation in Lebanon? Is it continuing to deteriorate?
Well, it's a very timely question because the answer in brief is it is deteriorating rapidly. The president of Lebanon, Naoun, who was head of the Christians and now sides with Hezbollah, made a demand on the prime minister designate, Hariri, to step down or form a government. And there's been this protracted and intractable political battle, which is coming in the backdrop of an economic crash that is the most serious challenge since the Civil War 15 years ago. And Aoun went on television and said that the cabinet list that Hariri suggested did not meet the minimum requirements. But in fact, Aoun urged him to come to meet him at the presidential palace and work things out. But it seemed to be an attempt to put the blame on Hariri rather than on himself. Hariri responded that he was surprised by this invitation and said he should just approve the list, all of whom were experts, no political nominees. Unfortunately, the situation there continues to deteriorate. Aoun was elected to a six-year term in 2016, and being an ally of Hezbollah, Hariri, who is considered the opposition before, even though he worked with Hezbollah before, is now locked in this power struggle with him. The local currency has lost 90% of its value since October 2019. And a country dependent on 80% of its basic needs from imports finds itself without foreign reserves, and protesters are taking to the streets in ever greater numbers, but not spilled into the kind of nationwide protests that we saw 2 years ago. So the government, which resigned last August following the big explosion at the Beirut port, has not been replaced. Russia is trying to step into the breach, by the way, trying to negotiate a deal, trying to place itself in some position to find a way out of the political crisis. But so far, I think they, too, have not succeeded. So the Hezbollah wanting to take over, and, you know, they have their own infrastructure, health system, banks with ATMs, educational system, welfare institutions. This is Iran's dream, that eventually Hezbollah really is the government, takes over Lebanon, and they are in control. Remember when Khamenei told his representative, Hassan Nasrallah, the head of Hezbollah, to send 8,000 fighters to Syria, 2,000 of whom were killed and 6,000 were wounded. And the agent arranging that was Qasem Soleimani, your old friend, John. So the situation there is really tense. It's very delicate. We've had all sorts of interventions that France tried, others tried, and Israel, of course, is put on notice because Hezbollah is capable of doing whatever they want. We know that the report by Guterres, the head of the UN, was very critical about the failure to implement UN resolution to protect and give access to the tunnels and to the other Hezbollah activities, and at the same time mentioned, you know, Israel's overflights, but primarily was critical about the situation there with the number of precision missiles aimed at Israel doubled, according to Nasrallah, and Israel's estimate that they have 130,000 rockets and military infrastructure aimed at Israel.
Now, for the strangest story of the moment, and you only have a minute, Malcolm. Tehran Times advertising cattle land in Montana for the well-to-do. Tehran to Bozeman, Malcolm. Does this make sense?
Well, they put out announcements and ads in the Tehran papers announcing that they have real estate agents in Ohio, North Dakota, Colorado, Oregon, Rhode Island, where they're urging people to buy homes and what are prices that are reasonable, they say.
Is Montana listed,
urging Iranians to buy.
Are they urging Montana? Are they selling cattle land? Do we know?
I didn't see Montana particularly. I did see Colorado. I did see North Dakota. But they list different states at different times, but claim that they have Iranian real estate agents operative in these places.
All right, I will have to investigate this story. This is very strange, Malcolm. Malcolm Hohnlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations, Thaddeus McCotter. I'm John Besh.
My name is Ruth Roosie. I'm a retired teacher. I'm 91 years old, and this is how I live United. I say retired, but not really. Once a week, I read books to children as part of United Way's education program. Reading to a child creates links between language and literacy. It creates a bond between grown-up and child. And believe it or not, it prepares them for a better academic future. Oh, we read about frogs and flies and pigs with wings, all sorts of juicy stuff. It's a joy to watch all those little faces. I figure I have the time and they have the need. And I've always believed that if we're not here to help each other, then what are we here for, really? My name is Ruth Roosie. I help kids prepare to succeed in school. So I don't just wear the shirt, I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live United. Go to liveunited.org, brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
I'm in almost every school bus and classroom. You see me around the neighborhood, and you tell me that I'm a pretty good kid.
Well, I'm one out of every five children in America, and I'm struggling with hunger.
Please visit feedingamerica.org today and find your local food bank for ways to help.
Every dollar you donate helps provide 8 meals for kids like me.
We are Feeding America, brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Lots of places can expose you to identity theft. That's why LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. If we find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, we alert you right away, all through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Save up to 30% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Hi, everyone. This is James and Dan. We are two-fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. Every week we sit down behind some microphones and share with each other the best things we've found out over the last 7 days.
Yes. So, for instance, Dan, did you know that you cannot tie a knot in four dimensions?
I knew that's where I was going wrong. Interesting.
There are all sorts of reasons why, but we would go into them all on our podcast, along with loads of extra facts as well.
That's right. And if you want to check it out, No Such Thing as a Fish is available wherever you get your podcasts.